Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, will you be meeting with your family soon? Maybe, maybe not. In any case, it's all an issue, one way or another, whether you are or you're not. It's a time of the year that people gather and share in different ways. So we're going to talk about that with our favorite author, who we've done a lot of shows with, even though we love a lot of other authors. This our author, I'll tell you who she is in a second, wrote The Road to Power, Fast Food for the Soul, and many other books. This one in particular became an international bestseller. And we're talking about Barbara Berger. Barbara, welcome to Energy Stew.
Thank you. Thank you. It's great to be back again. Yes. we always have such stimulating discussions, Peter and I, on the air and off the air, right?
This is actually a stimulating time because we're really talking about family, whoever that family is. Right. But it's an emotional time of year. Mm. And it's interesting that because I just did a radio show about this time of year, and in the card deck, it's 52 cards. Mm-hmm. This is the time of year where the heart cards are all prominent.
Okay, that's so really interesting.
We're in a very hard time of year. Mm-hmm. And so it makes sense that for many reasons why we need to gather together, because it's cold outside usually places, and dark often, more than other times of year. And so we need to come together, huddle together, create light.
Well, I live in Scandinavia where it's very dark. It gets dark very early, and candles and light are very important in this time of year. So it's true with the long, dark winter here. I mean, it's dark already, like at 3:30 in the afternoon here. So, So light and warmth, and it is part of the tradition. You're absolutely right.
And we need the light of others. So that's why, you know, all traditions have holidays at this time of year. Mm. So there will be a lot of gatherings. And what we wanted to talk about, and I asked you what would be a good topic for this show, and you thought it would have to do with meeting with your family.
Well, the reason why I suggested it is, as I work as a coach every day, I talk to a lot of people. And right now, at year's end, it's the same as every year at year's end, people come to me with their issues about meeting their families now at the end of the year. It's a very, very stressful time for a lot of people, because meeting the family triggers a lot of their issues.
Right.
And so it's like, how do I tackle it? It's the conflict between, you know, I love these people, I want to see them, but it's so challenging at times, and it's so difficult, and the expectations are, the level of expectation, you know, that we should all love each other, we should all understand each other. And then when you meet the reality of what actually goes on for a lot of people, they were really upset. I mean, I've just had a couple today, right before our show now, where the amount of anguish and the amount of mental anguish before the meetings, as a, how to tackle it, the unrealistic expectations, the feeling over responsible for how things go, being a people pleaser, not having healthy boundaries. There's simply so many issues that.
Oh, I know. I have a large extended family, and we gather, and I have my own problems about it.
We all do.
And
yeah, I call this getting real. It's like we all do. There isn't a person who doesn't have some issues, because our family of origin and our extended family, I mean, that's the where we have grown up. Those are the programs, the belief systems, all the things that we have have inherited, have learned, they all get triggered, they all come into play.
You know, my kids have grown into wonderful adults, but as teenagers, they were terrible. And and all kinds of things happened raising them that, you know, my wife and I did our best, but there were choices we might have made better along the way. And so I always said to them, whenever you think you need therapy, you know, maybe I can remind you of some of the stories that you might talk about.
Well, again, I know that, nearly everyone who gets to be our generation, when we look back, we always have things that we wish we had known then and we could have done. So again, I also say to people who come with that kind of problem that we have to sort of be understanding and forgiving also towards ourselves. That we did, we always had good intentions. We tried to love them as best we could. We did the best that we could at the time with the information that we had. And maybe we're a little bit wiser now, but again, we can't change what happened.
And so. I can say that about my parents 5, 70 years ago. That they did their best, but I really am in great judgment about some of their choices.
Me too. Welcome to the club. And my parents grew up on Riverside Drive, where you actually live. So, I mean, again, so I have this connection with you, like you feel somehow in that frequency that I grew up in, so.
Yes, it's interesting. You and I really are family too. And so let's talk about one of the subjects that I'm very interested in is when people say, "But you know, I love you." And it's like, "No, I don't know that." Oh, of course, I love you. I love you. It's like you know, what does that mean?
Well, I think, again, before we sort of go into that specific, it's also really important to say if we have a healthy model. I'm working on a new book that's called Healthy Models for Living and Relationships. And if we had a healthy model for how do we actually, what does a healthy interaction look like between mature adult human beings
who supposedly love each other.
Yeah, exactly. Who supposedly love each other. And you would, it seems to me that respect is the key word here, because if we get real about the human condition, we notice that everyone is different. Everyone is a unique creation of the living God, you could say. And everyone has their own subjective experience of this thing called life. Everyone has been programmed in their own unique way. And so when we come together, whether it's, you know, with colleagues at work or family or friends or whoever it is, we all are different. That's getting real about the way things are and that we often disagree about everything. So you could say that the basis of our democratic societies are that democracy is actually a system that's designed to sort of help the interaction with human beings in a healthy way, that there's space enough for everyone. Everyone has a right to be here.
And if that we're everyone wise, should be treated. But we're not always
exactly.
Wise.
Exactly. No. So again, so, but that, the big problem is in families, as you say, that we disregard some of these so-called basic democratic principles because we're family, as you say, I love you, but so it's really important to go back and compare it to what is healthy behavior, what is a functional relationship look like. And again, if we look at the basis of democracy, it's based on the Declaration of Independence says that all men and women are created equal with certain inalienable rights. And that's the whole concept that democracy, so-called, is based on one person, one vote. Everyone has a right to their voice. Everyone has a right to their experience. It doesn't matter if you're young, you're old, you're rich, you're poor. You have a right to be you because you are you. It's this basic inherent worth of each human being.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not a big fan of democracy in many ways, only because, you know, if you have a democracy that's made up of three wolves and a sheep, and
well, okay, well, that's a different discussion. Okay, that's a very interesting. We can do another show on that. But if we go back to a healthy interaction in a family, what would that look like, actually? And it was, as you said, that has to be this platform of respect.
That's it. I think that's key.
That's the key. I mean, again, I have done a lot of studies as a coach and so on, and the dysfunctional family, the main characteristic of a dysfunctional family is a lack of basic respect for each specific individual in the family to have a right to be whoever he or she is.
All right. Now, let's also talk about the mental health of each family member to be able to be in that space of respect.
I totally agree.
When they don't respect themselves.
I totally agree on that. And again, if we go back to the family interactions that are coming up now at the end of the year, I always say to all the clients that I have, it's getting real about this is that you cannot control the thoughts, emotions, mental health of any of the other members in your family when you get together. You can only try to take care of yourself in relation to what you meet.
Okay. And now, but let me just say something that I know that you've written about is that if it's too toxic, get out.
Exactly. One of the things that we have to understand is, I mean, again, if you go to any, I myself come from a very dysfunctional background, and I have myself gone to therapy and to 12-step programs and done all this inner work myself. And that's one of the things that you realize in the end, that because you cannot influence, change, control anyone else, that if it is too toxic, as you say, if it's abusive, if it's disrespectful to a certain degree, you have to stay away healthy self-love, healthy self-care.
I remember one time when I was previously married, I'm married now, but my previous wife, that marriage ended 43 years ago. So it's a long time past. But we were together for quite a while, about 50 years. No.
On that level. It seems like it, right? I've had quite a few marriages too, Peter, so I know what you're talking about.
And her parents, her father in particular, was very toxic. And and there was a time where I said, no, I don't want to go on this trip to visit your parents because it's too painful for me to be around. Mm. Your father, he used to spit in my face. That's how
really
challenging me to say, who's the tough guy in the family.
Horrible. Yeah.
And I wasn't willing to stand up for it. Not that I, I mean, I could have gone to battle with him, but I didn't. So I needed to stay away. And I said to her, I can't go on this trip to your family because it's too painful. And he said, no, your job is to be at my side. And she said her therapist agreed with her. And so then we went on the trip and I went along with it. And when we got back, she had lost all respect for me for not believing in not taking care of myself and being convinced by her to go on this trip and be abused by her father. So I couldn't win one way or the other.
Wow.
But so that's a lot of what
happened. But I think the point here, which is really important to that we sort of bring up here too, is it's what I call the myth of family. And that is this idea that because it's family, all of our good judgment about respectful, constructive communication, respectful behavior, that sort of flies out the window, you know, and now I can be a doormat, a people pleaser, over responsible. So all of this unhealthy behavior is sort of justified, you know, that everybody's in denial about that, you know, this feels like shit, excuse my French, and that, you know, that we're going to go along with it because the myth of family, the family justifies, and I don't buy that. I mean, if any Good. Place where we should treat each other with respect, it should be in our families.
But, you know, that's a whole understanding of tribal mentalities. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as if the tribe is more important than any.
Exactly. Individual. I agree. Mm-hmm. You're totally
that's
right.
That's how tribes function. That they, mm-hmm. Their maintenance of the tribe is more important. And the theme of tribes is sacrifice. So too bad for you if it doesn't work.
But again, we are supposedly, and that's where the conflict comes from, that we are not at that level of consciousness anymore, that we are more so-called enlightened, that we can allow differences, that we can tolerate that there's variety in the species, that we can appreciate our differences instead of, so I mean, it's the level of consciousness, and that's, you could say, also one of the big problems in families, that the different members, they are at different levels of soul development or consciousness, yes. You could say. And so that the ones who are so-called different or who maybe have other ideas about things, that they're ostracized because the group doesn't
tribal.
Exactly. So I certainly agree with what you're saying, but it is the evolution of the species that's going on, and that the ones who are more advanced, they often bear the brunt of the harassment from the larger group. I mean, well, that's,
we're going through that in our society in a larger context right now.
Absolutely.
It's that it's bringing out all of these toxic limitations of mm-hmm. tribal mentality. And, you know, for years I talked about tribal versus collective and all that, mm-hmm. and very few people could hear that. And now mm-hmm. I hear those words all the time.
Well, that's what happens when you're a pioneer and you're on the cutting edge, right? There's not that many people on the leading edge of thought. So good for you. I mean, that's been my experience also.
That's why I try to have guests on my show like you.
Yeah, again, so in other words, we want to push the envelope as far as we can. And so my premise here when I coach people is that whether or not other people are aware enough, enlightened enough, whatever you want to call it, to understand the importance of respect. And I mean, respect is really love of ourselves and other human beings. Whether or not they get that or on that frequency, we can do it. It's still our job. Are we in alignment with our integrity? Are we respectful over for other people? Do we have healthy boundaries? All of these right. things. And then it is, as you say, if it's too toxic when you try to do that, then stay away.
Right, right. But if you know how to maintain your boundaries, mm-hmm. and you can find a peaceful center, sometimes you can have a storm around you and maintain your peaceful center.
That's true. Well, again, one of the principles that I try to teach people for this is to, as you say, mind your own business. Stay in your own space. And don't, again, the whole idea about giving asked for advice or receiving the problems always arise when people violate each other's boundaries by coming with advice, ideas, to another person who didn't ask for it.
Judgments.
Yes, exactly. So again, our job is to try to be mindful of all these things ourselves. That's right. really the best that we can do. And whether or not other people get it, again, we can't control that. That's a realistic assessment of what's going to happen at any of these family events. Everybody's got their own thing going. And actually, I sometimes have this sort of vision when I coach people and I hear about all these, it's like you have all these so-called grown-ups, but it's actually, they're all five-year-olds at these family events. It's all the wounded inner child of each different individual is triggered.
That's
and you have,
so
and then
powerful.
They drink,
yeah.
Exactly. And then they all are drinking alcohol and they're all pigging out on food. And then, so you have in the end, you have all these five-year-olds, or maybe they're only four-year-olds. All the wounded inner children are actually
it's amazing how that is, and I can understand that, and you can as a parent, that our children are always our children, and we're always their parents, because their conditioning is so deep, Mm-hmm. That we can't be objective with each other. And fortunately, you know, we have good relations.
Yeah, but when I say that the wounded inner child is activated, it's not just in our children, it's in us too.
Sure. Oh, sure.
Yes, it's all of us. I mean, again, whether we're so-called the parents or the children, it's the same. We're all wounded. We've all got the wounded inner child. And usually when our lives are sort of going okay and we're kind of happy and things are functioning, we are much more operating from the adult part of us, the functional adult, you could say. But these family get-togethers, they trigger the wounded inner child, which maybe is dormant most of the time in your life. And then suddenly you're sitting there and you're sitting around the table and you're thinking, what's with me? You have such powerful emotions and you feel so freaked out by what's going on. And it's like, then you know that your wounded inner child has really been activated.
Right. I watch my sons who I think are amazing. And I think back on my own years and realize how proud I am of them and how much I had to struggle that fortunately, you know, they're better at things than I was. I love to see that. So it does plug me into my own wounds to see how wonderful they are.
That's good. Good for you.
It's healing.
But again, to accept the powerful emotion that gets triggered, both, you could say, as you say, the love, the good emotions, but also the more toxic things of the wounds of the past. That, I mean, that's been my experience a lot. I mean, because of what's happened to me. So it's been extremely painful. So,
again. And I have so much that I get plugged into being a twin. Mm-hmm. And all the trouble kids have seeking their own personal recognition.
And that's really interesting. That's true. You have a twin. I've seen his pictures on Facebook too. You really look alike.
Identical. And so.
It's an amazing thing that you have a twin. It's just.
But it's always amazing to me too. But what's interesting, you know, is that it wasn't easy being a twin, only because people would say, "Oh, which one are you?" "Oh, it doesn't matter. You're just one of them." You know, and you have to live with this sense that you're not yourself. And
that's interesting. That's really interesting. One of the people I had today, I had one of my new clients I had today, she had twins. And she said something similar to that, you know, that they were identical twins. They looked very much alike, but they were only 4 years old. So, but that must be really challenging, that if you always are like, you're the same.
Right. So I always talk to parents of twins. I say, I'm a twin too, but let me give you a suggestion.
You know, exactly. Thank you.
Differentiate them from each other so they have.
I'll tell her next time that I just talked to you about that. That's really good advice. Thank you for that.
Sure. So coming back to, because we're going to be near the end of the show soon, that we want people really to go on these keys that we've talked about. You know, just everybody needs to be as respectful as possible.
Yes, that's number one.
We're all so different.
Number two.
Our brains are all processing different things.
Yeah.
That we just don't know about. And
I think also in connection with that, it's really important to say, you know, like the one of the people I had today, you know, I feel over responsible that there's going to be a good atmosphere at the party, at the Christmas dinner they're going to have. And I said, there is no one subjective group experience. It's important to understand that if you're 15 people, you're 20 people, that there are 15 or 20 different experiences going on.
Yeah.
And that, you know, one person can be really freaked out and all his issues or her issues are triggered. Another one can be, you know, thinking that this is going pretty well. And the third one can be really bored. And another one can be, so there's no group experience in that way. Each one is having their own experience. And that it's also important to understand that you you can't do anything about it. Your only job, your only responsibility in this situation is that you're in alignment with your integrity as much as possible, that you treat everyone with respect. But the outcome of the whole thing is not your job. You can't fix it.
Right. And try to identify the tribal mentalities at work.
Well, that's true too. But again, a lot of the ones, especially the women, they have that idea, you know, they're going to do this party and they're going to make all this great food and they're going to invite all these people. And that somehow it's their job to make sure that everyone is happy. You know, you can't do that. You can make it as nice as you want, of course, and you can be as kind and loving as you want. Of course you should. I'm not saying we should.
Yes.
But in the final analysis, we cannot control everyone's experience. It's not the setup. As you know, I'm not God, you're not God, and everyone's got their evolution thing going on, right?
Well, let's just wish everybody the best.
Exactly.
Good luck, and do your best, and hopefully you've gotten something, some input from us that will help you have a better season. And Barbara Berger, the author of The Road to Power and many other books,
And actually, if we can just get this in, this article I wrote about meeting your family, it's on my website. So okay. You can go in and read this, some advice about meeting the family with a little bit more peace of mind. If you go and end up...
Beamteam.com.
Yeah, under Barbara's blogs, you will see this is the featured blog, okay. How to meet the family with a little bit more peace of mind.
Barbara, it's always so wonderful to talk with you.
Thank you.
And have a holiday. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.